Greetings, Sirenauts, and welcome to this week's episode of Observations. I'm your host, Sovereign Sire. I'm brought to you here by the good or not so good people at julieland.com. And as always, of course, I am joined by Mr. Richard Avery, legendary photographer and megalomaniac.
Crazy motherfucker. I'm OG.
Yes, you are.
I'm here. Who do we have today?
And today in the Sov Pod, we have Willie Hunter. He is a stand-up comedian and all-around funny, interesting, thoughtful fellow.
Oh.
Thoughtful fellow.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, madam.
Saucy language there.
You are welcome, sir. Oh. Let's keep it NPR polite today.
Okay. That's what it sounds like when we're doing NPR.
My dream is to one day do the NPR podcast where it's literally, but I want to do it with like a really dirty porn star.
Oh, well, that's not NPR podcast anymore.
And today's topic.
To narrate all actions like
it's like
those
today's
chicks.
Today's topic is anal gangbangs.
Yes.
Who decided that the flinty voice is the way to go?
No.
That's really why is the flinty voice the way to go?
They just
no
do
one's
it.
Nasally.
I listen to NPR every day, pretty much, when I drive. So they are always like this really serious, it's always this kind of tone. And
I listen to NPR, I can listen to it for about 25 minutes before I start to feel every wrinkle in my asshole.
Wow.
You know, before I really start to be like, man, like I, it's like, it's kind of like doing yoga. The best part is know it is like feeling better than other people when you're done. And NPR, it's the same way. You know what I mean? It's just suddenly I'm just more thoughtful and clever than the rest of these idiots I'm surrounded by on the freeway.
That's what I feel like when people talk about they listen to NPR, they do feel that way. Like, I'm better than you.
Well, I mean, our topic seems to be feelings and how motivated we are by the way we're made to feel.
Look at that segue.
I'm good. I'm practicing my segues. But I wanted to talk to you, Willie Hunter, about depression, because when I had you on before, we were talking about feelings and you touched on that you have suffered from depression. And I thought that would be a great whole episode of observations, because depression seems to be something that a lot of people are dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Too many.
Yeah, but you see the ads for Zoloft and Paxil and everything else all the time. You see people tweeting about stuff when Robin Williams passed recently and everyone was, you know.
Yeah.
Surprised, not surprised. You know, there was this whole thing of like the sad clown kind of stereotype
you know
we have.
When people die, and I always notice this, when people die, people aren't sad that that person's dead. They're sad because that person's not with them. It's a selfish reason when people get sad when someone dies. It's always right. Selfish. Like, oh, I remember when we did this. Like, why are you putting you in this? Why don't you just talk about the man? So when Robin Williams died, it was sad because he was part of our lives. So it was like we lost a piece of ourselves. So when he died, I was like, oh my God, I've known him my entire existence. Yeah. That's insane. And I wouldn't even. And I should be more sad that Robin Williams is not alive. But I was more sad that I lost a piece of me.
Right.
I wasn't shocked at all. I mean, he had found out that he was, I think he had like, what disease was he getting?
I think that it was like Parkinson's or something that was
he was diagnosed with something that
was going to deteriorate very quickly his, you know,
and
facility.
I told people when I heard that he passed away and I found that out, I literally said, good for him.
I had the same reaction.
I said, good for him.
I was talking to a friend and I said, I don't want to sound crass, but he was in his 60s, and I don't know how long we expect people to suffer.
Yeah,
because I've had depression and suicidal thoughts and things, so I understand for sure, like what pain feels like—that kind of emotional pain—and so my response was, I was like, how long do we expect someone to suffer through that pain before we go like, you know what?
Yeah.
Do you?
You did your time. Like you're cool.
But it's something
you know?
Like, yeah, exactly. It's that whole thing. It's that whole thing that's going on right now that of the right to die kind of movement and all this stuff about like, do you want to deteriorate physically or mentally and just let that person tell that or do you want to go out with some dignity and say like,
I would like to go out with some dignity.
Me too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There's no contest.
And a couple hookers and an eight ball.
Well, that's dignity.
Well, I find that people surprise me all the time. I told my mom. I sat down with her and I was like, if anything ever happens to me, you know, like something happens, I get in a car accident, something, I want you to pull the plug. Like, do not try to keep me alive. Yeah. Just, and I tell it to like my parents and all my friends, just, you know, like in case anything ever happens,
my
so there's
advice,
no
though,
doubt about like, and
my advice
is
get it written on paper. 'Cause that means nothing telling your parents.
That's true.
But like, but what surprised me is my mom was like, "Well, if something happens to me, I want you to fight like crazy." which really surprised me. Like I was like, "Oh, I thought we were kind of on the same vibe." Like, you know, who wants?
I think
to?
You got.
And
get...
she was like, "Oh no,
keep me alive."
Like, oh great, my mom's. I'm gonna have my mom for the rest of my life. She's gonna be one of those.
Yeah,
women.
I was like,
oh.
So if you're in a vegetative state, she's like, "Nope, I want like because maybe there's a miracle."
Maybe
and I'm like, when was like, why? How? Okay, if your life is this good, you're never allowed to call me and like complain for a half an hour about any of your aches and pains anymore. This moment right now, if I have to fight for you and keep you in a vegetative state, that tells me that you must actually really love life.
Yeah.
And so all that complaining is a bunch of bullshit.
That's exactly what
it is. I think what it is her going like, yeah, I'll be in a vegetated state. So you know what? For me to get revenge to my annoying little daughter that's been driving me fucking crazy all these years, she's going to have to now take care of me, sponge bath me, feed me, change my diapers. That's what I would do. Like,
yeah,
but payback. It was seriously one of those things where I was like, "Mom, I didn't realize that you loved life so much."
Yeah,
holy shit! I would have thought you would have had a more cheerful disposition all these years.
I haven't been clinically diagnosed with depression. This is just from my own diagnosis, I guess you could say. But I know that I am, you know, because I'm constantly, always in a state of. Discomfort and sorrow, but not like crying sorrow, just like
detachment, apathy.
Yeah. Gray, fuzzy.
Which can be like apathy can be kind of more, you can wake up in the morning and go like, where did my will go? Where did my motivation?
Do you feel like
I wake up and I go like, I'm just gonna stay here for the next hour or two.
Do you feel but do you ever feel like it's your highs are really great and the lows are like really low and you're just like, that's what I hate about meds, that they always take those highs and they bring them down and take those lows and bring them up and then you just live this life that's
and
like,
I don't want to live life like
I know
that.
That's why I had a
I like being I would, extremely excited and and I guess I kind of like being extremely depressed sometimes.
I went to therapy for five years and I remember my therapist trying to get me to do drugs and I tried them for a few months and I was like, fuck this shit. Like I just said what you said, I'll take the highs, but my theory in life has always been, I'll take the highs, just give me the equal amount of lows. Don't give me like 75% lows and 25% highs.
Right.
And the trick is never to get, I tell this to people all the time, and if you go to any of my life coach websites, it's all about like, don't get too high and don't get too low, and your life should be like this, not like this.
Yes.
And it should.
Well, I think, and too, it's just like, I have a friend, a comedian friend, that's been very open about the fact that he's on antidepressants, but we were talking about ADD, and I was like, I really feel like I suffer from it, but I'm afraid to take anything for it because I feel like, I don't know what I'd do if I didn't have that kind of anxiety and restlessness.
Yeah.
And he was like, don't, absolutely don't take the music because they have, he has it too. He has ADD. And he was like, they've proven that the medicine for ADD stunts your creativity. Like it goes into that center of your brain and it like shuts it down.
It makes you a shell of yourself.
Yeah.
I used to take Adderall when I was in college and I got all my work done. If you know, but if me
Adderall.
Being creative, I couldn't think of anything. I'm like, what? But I can get a lot of stuff done. I can stay focused and do things.
See, you're
but
not doing it right.
Well, no, because I was taking Adderall to write because I'm a writer, and I was taking Adderall to be able to finish writing.
Yeah.
And it was that paradox of I could write, but now when I'm like a part of the writing process is like the creative process to get there.
Yeah.
And it was like having to do this, I'd have to manage this thing where I was doing all the creative part of the writing ADD.
You know,
and then like when I was absolutely ready to just sit down and literally just write and not think, then I could take Adderall and like do that. But then also having to deal with kind of, it's like, it's not a miracle drug. It makes you feel very weird.
Yeah, it
you
does.
Know?
Did you self-prescribe yours? Is this in college? Like,
oh, no, I was like, I was prescribed. Okay.
My God. Because your parents must have loved you. You sound like someone who had health insurance.
No. I did this because they had a health experiment in the college I went to.
Right.
I grew up poor. My family couldn't afford
anything.
I was
like, oh, you were loved. You had health insurance. You had health care.
No.
Not even.
Black kid in Alabama? Nope. And I just said, all right, I'll take this test. And they're like, you have almost ADHD. And I was like, I kind of knew that.
Yeah.
And then they prescribed me for like a month. And it worked. I mean, my grades went up. My productivity went up. But I was like, I was just like a just like a robot most of the time.
I remember the first time I did it for the experimenting, I like this is years ago, and I remember just taking it here, and then I went for a walk. And I just remember being all like, the blue is bluer, the green is greener, like everything. And I was texting my friend, I'm doing this all the time, you know, And then the last time I did it, which was 4 years ago, I made the mistake of doing 10 milligram tabs in about 6 hours.
Oh my God.
With a bottle of vodka. And it was wrong. And apparently, I haven't done it since.
Apparently, that's what people are using Adderall for these days. I didn't know that.
We were treating it like it was cocaine.
I
need a bump. Yeah. You're like, no.
I've always had trouble with drugs because, especially with Adderall or when like meth or anything like that, is like immediately. So I suffered from meth addiction for a long time.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, and
I know several people
as a result of depression, and because I'm a female, it was especially because it suppressed your appetite, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I find, especially with like other models and stuff, that meth is like really insidious because it makes you thinner, and everyone around you is telling you that you look amazing, you look great. Like, so it's a double-edged thing where
I can need to do more.
Yeah. But for me, like the problem with it was always that because it made me so high functioning, I would feel guilty. Yeah. So I'd be out and I'd be like, everyone's going to know that I'm cheating right now.
Yeah.
And it was always this fear that if I ever did anything successful, that there would be any of the writing, they would look at it and go like, was this you or was this some chemical, you know, conglomeration that they made in a lab that produced this novel or this poem?
I guess if you suffer from depression, you need something to cope with. It's, if you don't want to take medications, like I just can't do it. And for me, it's alcohol. You know, that's my coping mechanism.
But isn't that also, that's a depressant though. That doesn't really help.
No. It actually is a depressant in the sense that it calms you down. But for me, it actually opens me up. Opens my personality. It makes me fit in with society because I'm like, it just makes me go, all right, just relax. And it gets to the point, like you said, that people would say, you're so fun to hang out with. I'm like, because I'm drunk.
Right.
But they don't know that I'm drunk because I'm very good at hiding.
Do you drink every day?
Not really every
other
day.
To perform?
I don't drink to perform at all. I don't like being on stage drunk. It's
gross.
I can't
even imagine.
But I'll drink halfway. If I'm hosting a show, I'll drink halfway through the show.
Okay.
Just to be on the same page as the audience, because I don't like the audience having a better time than me.
Right.
Like, oh, you guys going to get drunk? And
see,
I'm not.
I recently quit drinking, and for me, it's been a very interesting experience to go out and kind of see everyone and watch them through the evening get progressively drunker.
Yeah.
And I'm so, and it's like I feel like Superman because I'm sort of like, oh, I have these.
Yeah. And because when you're drunk and alcohol, it's just above, in your head. So everything's better than what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But it's interesting to watch how their personalities change and stuff like
that. I become a more open, gregarious person when I drink. I'm always hugging people. Yeah. I'm always saying, how's your life? I'm always interested in people for some reason.
Right.
So people come to me and like, man, we had a great conversation last time. I was like, I don't, who are you?
Yeah.
They're like, were you drunk? I was like, yeah. I was.
Wow. Yeah. And you don't remember?
I don't remember.
That's not good.
Yeah. So, but I'm totally functioning, and that's scary.
Yeah. Well, it is.
But I think a lot of people are medicating, even with like other things that aren't substances, like
they could be food.
Habits, food.
Well, again, everybody. I think everybody has this addicted personality. Everybody finds something, in a sense, to be addicted to. It could be, in my case, it's work.
Mm-hmm.
I always tell people, I don't work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, just for the fun of it. I do it because it helps me deal with everything else.
Yeah.
Right.
And when I go crazy or I get depressed, which I do deal with, I just go, you know what? I'm going to turn this negative energy into something positive and I'll go create.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think, do you ever feel like, I feel like when I'm really depressed, it's very hard for me to talk to my friends about it because they feel like it, like as much as a society and on Twitter and we have all these places where we're encouraged it's like if I sit down with the friend and go like, yeah, I was having like some pretty desperate thoughts the other day. Yeah. You know, I had a really hard time and I was kept thinking that maybe it'd be easier to just kind of quit, you know, maybe that'd be more noble than to kind of keep doing. And it's like, it's very hard to have that kind of a frank discussion with someone about that life gets hard.
Yeah.
It takes a very special person to kind of do that and not react in a really anxious way. You know what I mean?
No,
to have someone like, yeah, man, I understand. I feel
And there's nothing worse than a friend, because I went through this for many years. There's nothing worse than you tell somebody and you're just reaching out because you're just in need
yeah.
to talk. I need to understand this, so I need to get it out loud.
Right.
Absolutely.
And you might even the person that might have, it's nothing worse though than when then all of a sudden that person week, month, months later, they throw that shit back in your face.
Like, yeah.
And you're just sitting there just going, really? Like, just, you know, like I always say, how many times do we all say, God, I just want to kill myself? Well, we always say that shit. Yeah, doesn't mean we want to or we're going to. And depression, because I've lived with it my whole life, to me, it's always been about, you know, I that's why I say to everybody when I've talked to many people about this, is I get it out.
Yeah.
Give it time limits.
Isn't it weird how once you say it aloud and explain it to someone, and you're like, oh.
That's why therapy's so good.
That, yeah. Absolutely.
So can you mentioned that you tried to kill yourself when you were 20.
Like, yeah, what, that was my midlife crisis. I don't know why, but 20 was. I don't know why 20. It was my quarter life crisis. How about that?
Can you tell the listeners a little bit more about your background? So I am
the oldest of five. I had a stepfather. We have five kids, three different fathers. We grew up poor. I was a smart kid. I like to tell people that I was the white sheep in my family because I'm a black man. But obviously, if you're listening, you're like, you're a black man? Yes, I am a black man. If you're listening,
next time I have you on, I'm going to introduce you as the incredibly black Willie.
Yeah, thank you. I have to have that every time. Yeah. So I didn't even kind of fit in with my family. I told people my family was like, they loved watching the television show Martin. You know, remember that Martin?
Yes.
And like we had everything Martin. We had no books in our house though, not one book. And I was like a nerd, and I loved that stuff. And then I remember I went to college, and a couple years in college, you know, one thing about college they don't tell you about is it's fucking expensive.
Yeah.
You know, and I just couldn't afford college, right. And it struck me down. It's like if I can't afford college, then I got to go work at some factory and be miserable for the rest of my life. I can't do that. I'd rather end my life now.
Yeah.
And that's when I you know, tried to commit suicide. I think it was 20 years old. I remember I tell people all this.
Were you doing comedy yet? Like, was
I was
that,
not doing comedy
so you didn't,
then.
You didn't know
didn't
yet
know.
That you had that in you.
I was always I was like the class clown. I was always like the life of the party. But I never thought you could do anything with comedy.
Sure.
In Alabama, that's such a pipe dream.
I'm just trying to understand.
I'm just hating
like the
Alabama
mindset.
Right now. I never want to go to Alabama.
You know, I don't want people to say that Alabama is a great place to grow up. I think it's a great place to raise a family and grow up, but to become a individual, it is not the place. Yeah. You know, so I had to leave Alabama too, and I have never left the state before. So there's a lot of things that I need to do that I didn't have the guts to do.
Right.
So I thought the easiest thing to do was just end your life. Yeah, you know, except I don't like guns. So and that's the thing too is like I'm just. There's a lot of things I don't like. So how I try to kill myself, I was like, I can't even do this, you know. I think one time I ate rat poison. You know, I remember my friend goes, "What? What happened?" I was like, "I think I had Taco Bell right after it, so it didn't do anything to me." I took pills. I remember I had trouble sleeping, so I had all these sleeping pills. So I took a whole bottle of sleeping pills. Woke up the next day. I was like, damn it, I woke up.
Yeah.
Man,
I feel like shit.
Yeah. And then I remember you can't joke about this stuff, but I can, you know.
You have to.
I'm a comedian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You better.
You can't joke about it. Yeah, I can. I tried to hang myself once, but and what people don't tell you about when you hang yourself is it's not about the suffocation, it's about the tying enough to where you can break your neck. But if you don't do that good enough, you're just going to be hanging there for a while going, oh, fuck, I got to wait here for like an hour or something before I like. So I was like, that's too much. And then that's when I realized, like, I am God, I can't kill myself. Yeah. And then I started comedy.
God.
Do you find that that figuring out doing comedy helped the depression, like feeling like you had maybe more of a purpose? Or
it wasn't even doing the comedy, it was being around like-minded people,
right,
which is other comedians.
Yeah.
So we talk about depression, me and my other comics. We joke about it. It's
because
fun to us.
Because when you're around like-minded people, it's just like all of a sudden you're like, wait, I'm not this weird.
Yes.
I'm not the white sheep anymore.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of us.
There's a bunch of us.
And I've said this, I've lived here for forever, and I tell this people all the time. LA is the capital of dysfunctional people.
Yes.
I say to people, if you're fucked up and you had a fucked up family life, come to LA and you'll fit in just right.
Yeah.
It's just like,
and
why
people are very tolerant of your weird fucked up behavior.
Yeah, but you know this too. Why do you think like when porn stars are all together? It's like they validate each other. It's okay to be crazy
and
fuck for money. And it's all, you know, it's like it.
Well, I mean,
when you're around
the same
people, it's all good.
But
all of a sudden,
you
take them out of the bubble and they put them in around some normal, everyday people.
Yeah.
They get all freaked out. Like, now I'm the odd one out. And we're all like that. You know, we all feel
like,
more.
And that's why I think, like, comedians, we're the most fucked up, because we openly talk about all that stuff. And that's why people kind of, like, if you go to comedy clubs and I'm sitting there and there'll be some guy who will tell me his life story. And I'm like, why are you telling me this? And I was like, oh, because I will allow you to say that to me. And I'm actually kind of, you know, I want to know more.
Yeah.
And that's why I think porn stars and comedians actually have a connection, yeah, is because we're like, whatever.
Well, yeah. I think that in both ways, it's kind of a weird sort of social commentary. It's like we're kind of occupying these sort of outlying spheres. But I find for me, it's very hard with depression doing porn because there's a stigma about expressing having any negative feelings. So it's like if you do porn and you're depressed, well, it's because you're a porn star. I mean, even with other girls talking about trying to find a therapist, and it's like, oh, well, like, do you know any therapists that are, like, you know, like, sex worker friendly, which means, like, they're not going to immediately tell you that, like, all of your problems are caused by the fact that you do sex work.
Well, that's just the taboo nature of porn here in America.
It's like, I feel like there's a lot of suicide in porn. You see, and I think it's not
because they have no one to go to.
And I feel like it's more because they have trouble finding people that they can talk to about these things.
Well,
than
there's suicide everywhere in every profession. Sure. I mean, really, but I think it comes out because I have helped girls get therapists in this town, and luckily if they find the right therapist, which is very important, took me years to find my right one, you find somebody who does understand and doesn't judge you on that.
Right.
Now, a good therapist isn't going to judge it, because they're also going to, if they're smart therapists, like I always say, like I've heard it all before with every girl, I always say, like, doing porn has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
It's like, it really doesn't. It's just, it's a way to make a living if you're smart.
Yeah.
That's all it
is. Absolutely.
It's
just
a fucking job. And it's
right.
So, but it's like, I think when it comes to depression, what I've always found, because I, like I said, I have suffered from it my whole life, but it didn't take me, it wasn't until I was 40 when I realized that I had, that's what it was. I was like, oh, these feelings, all this craziness going in my head since I was little, is depression, you know? But when you start talking about it, and the more I educated myself about it, the easier I got to handle it. And I understand when I'm in a funky mood, I always say, like, I know where this is coming from, and I know it's what's causing it. And so I find it better. Like I was gonna say, like, probably doing comedy, you might be blue, but like if you have to go perform tonight, you're gonna feel so much. It's almost it's your medicine.
It's the best thing
you
ever.
You know what I mean? Like you just
it really
want,
is.
Especially if the show, you nail that show, great audience. It's like it doesn't get any better than that.
For me, there's no more comfortable feeling than being on stage, and I think the audience more than they thank me.
Yeah.
They have no idea how much they're helping me as they think I'm giving them laughs. Like no, this is my sanctuary.
Yeah. Right. Well, because you get to express. Like I think it's the same. Like I was saying before, it's like you get to express something that normally is taboo.
You would do like, with a therapist, but instead you're doing it with 200 people.
Yeah.
I think society, like you can, like I feel really powerless to the culture all the time, but if I can go on Twitter and make jokes about like, oh, have you noticed that the way people are consuming the interview is, the way they're consuming it is kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Like I can express that. Like I can go out there and express it. And it's like, it makes me feel better about this culture I'm in where it's at times I think as a comedian, you get to like,
but I have
express
a,
that.
I
you
have
know
a,
what I mean?
Like, I have a problem.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have a problem with that because that's like a lot of people and a lot of girls and a lot of people expressing themselves to Twitter
looking for
validation.
With my superior intellect.
You should not be. You're not supposed to. You shouldn't be looking there for validation. And
not for validation, but I think it feels good to be able to express.
Oh, it feels good to get a lot of retweets.
Like I just feel like, you know, for me as a writer, like if I get to write an essay for XO Jane or something about a phenomenon.
It's like
I feel
also
better.
Turns into the whole MySpace thing. I have 500 friends. Like I got 700 friends.
I don't know. It's just it's like very, very king-like, you know. It makes you feel important.
No, I get it. I get it. I was sorry to follow up, but like so now you're much better after all this. You learned from it all.
And again, I have to say, mushrooms saved my life. People don't understand.
People
and
keep
this,
saying,
this
no,
should
that's like,
be.
This is the show. Like we should just call it the psilocybin show. Like,
everybody should do mushrooms after they get to 25.
I remember my friends did it, and they said I did. I was scared because I was scared that I would get to a mental state to where I couldn't come back from.
Right.
Like I would go crazy. That's what I thought. And
then you realize you already were.
I already were crazy. So I need to jump out of that for a moment and you know, smell the flowers, so to speak, and then come back in. And then I remember recommending it to other people. And I have friends who don't even do drugs, you know, try it and also say that it changed them for the better. You know, it's just, I don't know what it is. I think Greg may have said this someone. He said it just makes you realize that we're all one.
Yeah.
That's what it is. You realize, like, oh, we're all particles in the universe. We're right. really nothing. Everything doesn't mean anything. You're like, we're yeah. insignificant in the grand scheme of life.
Well, it's, yeah, that you're that you can make whatever meaning you want. And yeah. Like, and that way, like, we're all the god of our own experience. Yeah.
How old were you when you did mushrooms the first time?
It was only a couple of years. I was like 25, I guess. Yeah, yeah.
It's like
I always tell people, I started doing a lot of drugs and all this stuff at age 25. I wasn't mentally, you know, mature enough to do it earlier. And I would tell people, like, first of all, you gotta be sure of yourself first before you even try to do any drugs. Don't just do them because you see other people doing them, because then you'll throw your life away because you don't know what you're doing. Because then you can know what your body likes. But like, I don't like ecstasy. Yeah, but I tried it once. I'm like, never doing it again.
Yeah, but that's why, like, I always tell people, I didn't do drugs the first time until I was 28. And I always tell people, I'm glad I did, because I was mature enough, like you said, and handle it. So from that part on, it made me a smart.
And you didn't overdose, too. Yeah, you know your body.
And I've been doing them ever since. Like I always say to everybody, like, you got to pace yourself. I can still do an eight ball. I can still do ecstasy.
And that's why you're my hero.
And that's, like, but I'm saying, absolutely. But I say that. Yeah, but I say that to people all the time. Like, I always tell my friends, like, who wants to sit there and do all the drugs? But and I know plenty of girls who've done everything by the time they're 18. And you're like, I've been smoking weed till when I was 10, and I've been doing ecstasy since I was 12. And I'm like, what do you have to look forward to? Like, boring. Like, pace yourself.
Maybe girls mature faster. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I came from a pretty, like, rough childhood. So I remember the first time I was exposed to cocaine, I was 9.
What?
So and for me, growing up was more about. I remember the first time doing a drug because I wanted to, like, have a good time, not because I was trying to feel different.
Yeah.
Like, that, what to me was like the sign of maturity was going, like, oh, like, I want to have this specific experience that's pleasant, and so I'm going to go do this thing instead of, like, what can I get in my body the fastest to make me feel different than how I feel right now, or to deal with, like, my surroundings or whatever. So, and I think, like, a lot of people, like, when they're doing drugs when they're younger, they're doing it because, like, just get me out of this feeling.
Get me out of this world.
Get me out of this puberty feeling. Get me out of this high school. Get me out, like, you know, like, all the shitty feelings that life is. But life does suck when you're in high school.
Oh, God, it's
full
of shitty
feelings, you know?
It was great.
You know, I had good friends.
You know, it was terrible.
You know what I tell you why high school was great?
Yeah.
Everywhere.
I've said this for years, why high school was great for me? Because I never went.
I graduated early too. I was in about 2.5 years.
I had keys to the dark room and the school alarm system.
Wow.
I could come and go as I please.
Oh my God. Yep. I was occupied with a lot. I played all the sports. I was in all the clubs. I didn't do anything, and I was a straight edge student. I didn't drink, I didn't do anything. But I went to all the parties.
But see, that's equally terrible to me.
I know.
Like,
it was
the life of the popular, like, you know, easygoing kid is a lot of times, I think, just as distraught
but I,
as
yeah. Yeah, but I also think the, like,
yeah, it was horrible.
But like, if you look back, you can't say that it's bad because it got you where you are today. And
yeah.
It's
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're a smart person.
I had great friends too.
Yeah.
My high school friends were amazing. And we still keep in touch today, and I think we'll be friends for the rest of my life. Just very rare for a lot of people to keep their high school friends.
Same way.
Yeah.
Once I left, I was like, I don't ever want to talk to people again. Fuck off.
The worst part is my high school friends, when they meet my comedic, like, now, like, a male adult friends, I want to see how they interact with each other. That's going to be an interesting thing.
I just hate the fact that, like, that's what I hated about when Facebook got invented. All these people I never wanted to hear from again start fucking reaching out.
Yeah.
And you're like, there's a reason I haven't talked to you in 20 years, and it's going to be another 100 before I do. So quit asking me to confirm, you know? You're like, ugh. Yeah.
It's scary to me watching all those people now have kids and start a family, and that never crossed my mind.
Let's
Jesus.
Not go there. I'm gonna get real depressed, real fast.
And that's how we kill myself.
No, we're
that's how we bring it back together.
We're here at Julie Lander about bringing everyone together, and lifting them out of their spiraling, their death spiral.
Yeah,
and
everybody kill themselves.
No, don't do that. Don't, no, except the bad ones.
Except the bad
ones. Except the boring people. Just run,
that's
run,
the thing. Like, why is it always...
I didn't say
why
that,
do always, like, the good people kill themselves? Like, you know...
Because there's a lot of bad people.
And why can't the bad people be... Like, so I hate... Every time it happens when some guy, you know, kills his family and then kills himself.
Like, just kill yourself.
I'm like, dude, kill yourself first, then the family. Like, can you just try it that way once?
Right.
Like, you know, it's like... And why?
You know, that's a great thing right there. I think that's the most coward thing you can do right there.
Oh, totally.
Like, oh, you're going to kill your family and then kill yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, because you can't take... You wanted to kill them, obviously, and you did it. You got to live with that. You should live with that.
Exactly.
Right, yeah, the frustrated rage. Have you seen the Black Mirror?
No.
Oh, well, you got to watch that. There's a really great episode that deals specifically with that that.
I know what I'm doing tonight then.
Yeah, no, it's you haven't got on the Twitter Black Mirror train.
No,
it's like
I
everyone's
haven't.
Like, oh, you have to watch these shows. It's all like right. a Twilight Zone, but for now. It's written by Charlie Brooker, who's the guy that does Newswipe and stuff over in England. But anyway, it's a really amazing sort of conceptually this idea of a future in which justice is kind of exactly that, where people are made to sort of relive and deal with these feelings like kind of on and on for eternity. But on that light and lovely note.
It sounded like you were doing a commercial for them.
Yeah,
it's a really good show. And as a writer, when you encounter something amazing, you kind of want to everyone.
I'm excited.
You want to encourage people to like consume good programming so that more of it gets made so that eventually I can get a job.
Oh. You know? That's what it comes down to.
Essentially, yes. Well, thank you for being here and thank you for talking with us and opening up about your experiences with depression. And why don't you tell our lovely audience where they can find more of you and get some laughs?
You can follow me on Twitter at Will Hunter Show. I also perform stand-up comedy a lot at the Comedy Store or the Improv, so you can check me out on one of those places.
How do they, like, is there a way to find your schedule? Do you have, like, a website or anything like that?
Well, they do it, like, the week of.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we don't do, I'm hosting at the Comedy Store Monday, and then each Monday I'll know what I have for that week, and it changes every
so
time.
So follow your Twitter, I'll tweet out all my dates
and stuff. Okay. Yeah.
Sweet, perfect.
That's good. That's good to know.
And everyone, of course, knows who I am. I am Sovereign Sire, your lovely hostess. You can find me on Twitter, at Sovereign Sire, and you can find me on my Julieland website, ilovesov.com. Bye!